Chapter 11, Perseus, 627 Bronze Age. Once in their long voyages across the Thalassa, Pandora had told Perseus how Acrisios's brother Protos had helped her, if only out of loathing for his twin. Still, the man was Perseus's uncle, and so it was to his son, Megapinthes, Perseus's cousin, that he left the kingdom of Argos. Fitting enough, he supposed, given that Acrisios had driven Protos from Argos years back. Thus, with carts laden with a share of the Argosian treasury, only what was fair Perseus was certain, he and Andromeda and a few retainers had headed inland, among the slopes of central Alados, into the unclaimed wilds between Argos and Corinth. The way Perseus saw it, if fate had spoiled his claim to Argos, well, he would see Andromeda a queen of elsewhere. Only most cities he knew of weren't, in fact, taking auditions for the roles of king and queen. More was the pity. So he'd pick out a tall hill surrounded by woods and bounded by a wide stream and set his people to building a fortified wall. Ah, he wished he could say the wall was but to protect the livestock from wolves, but in truth, their new home lay not so far south from Minyan lands, and he'd rather discourage raids with a show of strength.
Mykine,
Andromeda said when he asked what they should name it. She had their newborn son, Sthenelos, cradled in her arms while she surveyed the work alongside Perseus, after the abundant mushrooms that sprung up alongside the stream.
Ah, he said. If I'd known you wished to live in a mushroom, I'd have rather built a hut in the woods instead of founding a citadel for a palace.
Maybe I want a palace and a hut in the woods, depending on my mood.
Sure. Sometimes I want trout, sometimes grouper.
He shrugged.
I can't much argue with it.
No. And Argosian drachmae paid workers aplenty, while others flocked to his new town perhaps seeking a fresh start themselves. Fate, or life maybe, made fools of many it well seemed, and Perseus could offer them refuge, or at least mushrooms. A decade later, and the walls of Mykinai were among the strongest in Alados, or so Perseus told anyone who asked, and a good many who did not. The grand palace he had built for Andromeda housed their many children, and now he and his wife reclined before the sacred hearth, watching those children chase each other about the four fresco-painted columns of the Megaron. Well, all save Sthenelos, who watched over his younger siblings like a guardian spirit, silent as he drifted around the fringes. Electrion and Alcaeus dominated the games, as always, with Ilios, Mestor, and Gorgophone giggling, attempting to follow the lead of their big brothers. Laughter, pure and untrammeled, rang through the hall, and Perseus could not have imagined a greater blessing.
No, no,
Electrion said, wagging his finger at them.
Mestor and Ilios are the Argosian phalanx. Gorgophone is the abducted queen they have to rescue. But I want to rescue them,
the five-year-old girl whined.
You can't rescue boys. You're a girl. They're smaller than me. Papa,
cried five voices all at once. Perseus started to look to his wife for help, but Andromeda's hands shot up.
Oh, I can't rescue you. I'm a girl.
With an affected shrug, Perseus rose, drew upon his pneumatiki, and raced forward like the wind, snatching up his three youngest in his arms and spinning them around.
Now you all need rescuing.
Twice more he spun round, then faltered on spotting the Titan watching from the shadow of one of the columns, her gray eyes assessing everything in the palace, her expression unreadable. Setting the children down, Perseus took a knee.
Goddess Athene.
Walk with me, Perseus.
A twinge shot through him. A sudden fear she would again ask him to undertake some grand quest, as if the slaying of two monsters had not made enough story for one man. Any more and it would start to seem like bragging, and he'd have to worry on people thinking his tales embellished. Ah, the burdens of heroism. But one did not deny a goddess. While they walked, Athene eyed the frescoes bedecking the wall. Perseus had hired Athenian painters for the designs, and, naturally, took great pride in their epic depictions, ranging from his own slaying of Cetus to the famed Gigantomachy,
which in fact showed Athene fighting Gigantes. Only a slight hesitation in her step indicated she had noticed her own presence on the wall, and then she led him out, past the vestibule and into the gardens. A flock of doves had settled upon the olive trees, and a peacock roamed the yard, strutting with understandable pride in its plumage. If Perseus had a rainbow coming out of his arse, he'd prance a bit too. "Time has blessed you at last, Perseus," Athene said, eyeing the peacock as though it might charge her in defense of its territory. "Your children shine radiant, and your wife looks on you with genuine love."
"Requited, I assure you."
Andromeda's smile had become the measure by which he judged his life. With a look, she could still send his heart soaring or plummeting.
"Then you must count yourself among the most fortunate of men."
Ah, he did it that. "Now, Mycenae has begun to earn itself a name amid the poli of Olados."
"I cannot help but fear the sweetness of your lure, goddess. I'd prefer not to swim straight into the trap and find it shut behind me."
The Titan lady drew up short.
"I'm not trying to trap you. I've come to offer you advice. A prophecy, if you will."
Ah, and Perseus wanted another prophecy about as much as he wanted a mule with runny shits traipsing about his bedchamber.
"Do tell."
"Choose your son, Electryon, as heir to your kingdom, Perseus."
My secondborn? That ought to sit well with Sthenelos. Should I actually instruct them to make war upon one another, or just let nature take its course?"
Now Athene leveled her heavy gaze upon him, its weight paralyzing.
"If I said they would fight, would it prevent you from following my counsel?"
"It might,"
Perseus admitted.
"Not that I am not grateful for all you did for me, goddess, but I cannot see my own children at one another's throats."
"And if I guarantee Sthenelos will never raise hand or blade against Electryon?" All he could offer her was an overwrought shrug, spreading his hands. A part of him, one he'd never dare show her, wanted to demand by what right she came here, intent to meddle in the destinies of his children. While he might owe his life and that of Andromeda to her aid, did he bequeath such a debt to another generation?
"Why does this matter to you?"
The worn, almost battered expression that overtook her made her seem too human. To behold an Olympian thus, racked with doubt and disconcertion, sent his stomach burbling. "The future is not always clear," she admitted, voice far away as though she spoke to someone else. "Not always, but I can say, along a certain path, Electryon will marry a descendant of my own bloodline, and their line will culminate in the birth of the greatest hero in the history of Alados." Perseus rubbed his hands together, as if wiping away the whole thing.
"Ah, well, that won't do now, will it? I can't have my descendant outdoing me. I've worked rather hard to earn my way into the bard's tales, you know."
"Do this thing for me, Perseus. That and return to me the adamant sword and shield that I might bestow them upon the boy when he comes of age."
Of course, in the end, he'd not deny her aught, nor deny the land a hero. How could he think to do so? How, when he did owe so much of the life he'd won to her? Without Athene, he'd not have defeated Medusa, much less found and rescued Andromeda. But behind the foppish bravado, a niggling fear did remain.
"Will I be forgotten then?"
Athene laughed at that.
"Men will tell stories of your deeds for as long as the stars glint in the night sky."
Ah, that, he supposed, would probably do.